Hi guys, it's EricRPG, and I'm back with another Metroid retrospective. And joining me today is
David McBurney, Family Master of the Q&A Quest podcast on RP Gamer.
It's nice to talk with you again.
Yeah, it's always good to hear from you.
But today we are going to be talking about the Metroid Prime series.
Oh man.
It's a lot of stuff. I mean, there's three games plus three spin-offs.
Yeah, I was going to ask, are we counting things like pinball?
But, Metroid Prime is weird because it's like an alternate universe. Even though Nintendo's never really said so, but it doesn't really fit anywhere else in the timeline.
Officially, it's just supposed to be all set between Metroids 1 and 2. But, you know, you kind of have to accept, like, a certain vagary of timelines to make it all fit.
I mean, what could see all the incidents in the Prime series as being the impetus for her going to SR3?
Let's just get rid of these things.
Yeah, it's
one of those things that's, like, Metroid's timeline is kind of loose outside of, like, 3, 4, and 5, so...
Yeah, because, like, there's no time scale for how long it took between the first game and the second game.
Yeah.
And it does show that she has continued contact with the Galactic Federation.
Yeah, I mean, that's always, like, a running thing, is that, like, it wouldn't be until, like, somehow she's always still getting work and still working with them. Regardless of how many disastrous things happen.
She, in my opinion, she's less of a bounty hunter and more of a mercenary.
Cause she's
doing all this extracurricular work for, like, the organization she used to be a part of.
Yeah, she's a victim of, like, fucking downsizing. She's just been turned into a contract worker.
One person army.
This is cheaper than hiring a PMC.
It's about, well, the first game's about how they went to this talent and planet after getting a distress call to go to another space station where something's being stolen, much like Metroid 3's opening.
Yeah. Do we want to talk at all about the actual, like, release information around these, or are we just gonna?
It was developed by Retro Studios, which...
Yeah, it was developed by Retro Studios. It came out the exact same day as Metroid Fusion.
This is a development studio in Texas.
Yeah, they were former Iguana developers who used to work on the Turok series. There was some history of the original Metroid Prime's development. This was a tumultuous time for everyone involved, and Nintendo essentially had to buy out the studio just to get rid of its toxic head.
Mm-hmm. But it was also worked in conjunction with some of the staff at Nintendo RD1.
Yeah, I believe the liaison was primarily Kensuke Tanabe.
Yeah, so it says here on the wiki.
Yeah.
And unlike the previous entries in the series, they went with a first-person perspective.
Which people were controversial about at the time.
Which Nintendo themselves were advertising it as a first-person adventure as opposed to a shooter.
Yeah, they didn't want people to think it was Quake, but people sure thought they were making Quake.
But they managed to translate it pretty well. And you've got all the beams, but instead of them stacking on top of each other, you have to select between them.
On the bright side, they also didn't keep the setup for Metroid 1 and 2, where you have to switch between them at specific pedestals.
Mm-hmm.
But yeah.
But the Waybeam had special properties this time, because it would be used to shoot between certain, like, objects and power electrical devices.
Yeah, its original function doesn't really work when you're seeing from a first-person perspective. It can't see where you would be aiming past a wall.
But it also had some weird like arcing patterns too, so it was kind of hard to get used to unless you did a charge shot.
Yeah, it was not my primary weapon when I was playing Metroid Prime.
Yeah, it's like once you get the plasma, you don't need anything else.
Yeah, which is kind of true of the others. If they didn't stack, it would probably be true of the others mostly.
But Spacer isn't there because presumably because Charge Shot kind of fulfills that purpose because it just has a wider arc.
Yeah, the Charge Shot also got the bonus property of pulling in power-ups in this one.
Yeah, like some kind of weird gravity well.
Yeah, which is nice because generally getting to them can be a lot more cumbersome in 3D. But
especially
it is one
if you can't kill it in a location that you just can't reach.
Yeah, that's always fun. So having that, like, tractor beam effect was very useful, but it's one of those things that is not immediately apparent, as I recall.
Well, there were 2D sections, usually when you turn into a morph ball and into a tunnel.
Yeah, you'd have these little, like, 2D mazes.
Speaking of which, morph ball has a lot of interesting properties because it's a 3D space now, where you can gulp half pipes and use the thing called a boost ball.
Yeah. Samus Aran's pro ball. I don't know. I can't make this joke work.
It's like, why didn't they do that? Like, make a mini game where you just skateball or whatever.
I'm convinced that somewhere in the prototyping stage they probably did mess around with that. It would have been the time.
I wouldn't be surprised if, like, she actually rode a skateboard and then they decided, let's just use the morph ball instead, but it's all puzzles in the game instead of a mini game.
Yeah, the game is really trying to make just about everything from Super Metroid work in 3D. I feel like the biggest omission from this one is I don't think the screw attack is in the first.
Yeah, the screw attack didn't show up until 3, I think.
I thought it was in 2, but it was one of those things where I think they had a lot of issues with how does this work in 3D.
Yeah. I think the way they made it work is that you use it to destroy certain barriers, and that's pretty much it.
Yeah, it's no longer like I'm jumping and now I'm invincible, as I recall.
Which is also how Space Jump worked.
Yeah, Space Jump, I think, got turned into like the Space Jump boots that are just like a double jump.
Mm-hmm.
Which, it's much more dangerous to give players an infinite jump in 3D, so I can see why they did that. Not that this game was free of out-of-bounds bugs, as any speedrun could attest.
Mm-hmm. But, like you said, it came out the same day Fusion did, which we're going to talk about in another episode, but it did have a weird Easter egg that if you own Fusion and you stuck it in the GBA player when you turn the game on, you could access the Fusion outfit costume skin.
Yeah, you would give, it would retexture Samus's suit to be the Fusion one, which looks really ugly in 3D, I'm not gonna lie. But it was a cute Easter egg. Like, those two games interacted in that way. Like, if you did the proper Game Boy Advance GameCube adapter link, you could, I believe, unlock the original Metroid in Fusion by having
that too.
Completed Prime data. But yeah, I remember the tenor around this release was actually kind of interesting because, you know, there hadn't been a new Metroid since Super Metroid in 94. So it had been 8 years, which seemed like an eternity at the time.
The original Metroid was also added to Zero Mission if you beat that game.
Yeah, if you beat that, it just unlocks automatically. There's no connectivity thing. They love tossing the original Metroid into things. But there was like a curious, like, people were not at all excited for Prime because they were convinced it was just going to be again like Quake or something, and they were very excited for Fusion because it looked like Super Metroid. And then like the tenor really reversed around the two releases afterwards, where people got very upset at the changes made to Fusion to make it a more handheld experience and a more like digestible one for new players, and were more gravitating towards Prime, which is, despite being in 3D, a much more Super Metroid-type game.
Also, because it is a 3D space, they wanted to do interesting things with Samus's visor. So she has three different modes. X-ray, thermal, and scan. That in addition to our normal.
Yeah. Yeah, the scan visor is kind of how the game like gives explicit exposition, as opposed to, you know, like, because Prime has like a slightly more complicated story that is slightly harder to tell in abstract than something like Super Metroid.
Mm-hmm.
So the way they get around that is the scan visor.
So, it to introduce the concept of lore, which, based on this game's release date, is pre-Dark Souls stuff.
Oh, yeah. Long, long prior to that.
And I'd argue that the Dark Souls games are basically Metroidvanias.
Certainly the first one is. The later one, 2 especially, is probably less so, just because it's such a segmented experience. But in general, they definitely take inspiration from how Metroid lays out environmental designs and the ways that they can twist back in on each other or interact with themselves.
But like, it's called Metroid Prime for the very reason is the final boss is Metroid Prime. So, and then that became another new final boss, which is just another form of that boss, which recurs through the next several games.
Yeah, probably worth noting, like, the game starts on that spaceship, and then you end up going to the nearby, like, Talon 4 because,
reasons.
You're chasing Ridley.
And, I liked all the data logs and seeing space pirates even make their own logs.
Yeah, it's fascinating because, like, you look at it took me a very long time to realize that space pirates are not supposed to be just weird space monsters.
Yeah.
Like, they are supposed to be sentient creatures.
It's just that every time you fight them, they're always trying to kill you.
Yeah. Yeah, no, they can all talk, they're all intelligent. And they definitely have opinions about Samus and all the research they're doing.
It kind of reminds me... Yeah, I wonder if, like, Doom 2016, with its demons making logs about the Doom Slayer, kind of reminded me of that and the logs in this game.
Yeah, it's like the Doom 2016 stuff is probably somewhere between a combination of this, which Doom 2016 definitely feels like it learned some things from Metroid Prime despite being a much more straight-faced first-person shooter.
And having it read
but also
you have to kill everything, but...
Yeah, but the thing that... the other thing that it's probably pulling from is the, like, complete madness of the Doom Bible, so...
But I think Eternal probably went even further with that. I never got around
to
playing
yeah.
it yet.
That one's got actually a surprising amount of story.
But, there are different endings for this game, but it's really nothing special.
Yeah,
it's
like
without the helmet or with the helmet, and that's it.
Yeah, it's just, it's essentially just foreshadowing Dark Samus in Metroid Prime 2.
But, there are some art galleries I unlock, so that's nice, like, more companies need to do that, let you see the artwork for your game.
Yeah.
But that typically seemed to always be a Western thing and not really a Japanese thing.
Yeah, one of those things, like, certain developers were much more open about pre-release stuff than others, and I feel like Japanese publishers became much more protective of that pre-release and concept work much faster than Western studios did.
But that's it for merely Metroid Prime. Going on to Metroid Prime 2 Echoes, it's more of the same really, but there's a new twist where there's this light world dark world mechanic that's reminiscent
Metroid
of
Metroid Prime, A Link to the Past.
Yeah, reminiscent of Link to the Past. But they made the controversial decision to make all your different gun types have ammo.
Yeah, this is actually kind of a mean game if you're coming out of the heels of Metroid Prime, which is not the easiest game in the world, but is relatively breezy compared to Prime 2.
Also, in the Dark World, you take damage as long as you're constantly outside of areas where there aren't any barriers to protect you from the harsh environment.
You eventually get a suit that mitigates it. I don't think it makes you immune, though, which is a curious choice as well.
Yeah, you don't get the immune suit until, like, near the end of the game.
Mm-hmm.
But,
yeah, it's unfriendly.
But it is an interesting look at, well, like, what Samus would have if she got something other than the traditional Varya and gravity suits.
Yeah.
Which is a concept I think they need to re-explore.
Mm-hmm.
But they usually, I think what's going to happen though instead is if Mercury Steam makes a new sequel, which they probably are, they'll probably have Varya suit and gravity suit and like normal, but other things that help you get through other environments.
Yeah, Dread has some like actual push to do some different power-ups, which is the first time that it happened in a while, so I'd be interested to see where that goes, but that's a different discussion. But yeah.
Anyways, you learn a little bit more about the Chozo in this series, and the second game especially. Because this is apparently one of the planets that they have friendship relations with, or they, at least they did.
Now, back when the Chozo did anything other than sort of make power suit upgrades.
So basically there's these bug creatures, but then there's this evil thing called the Ing that basically are encroaching on their dimension.
Yeah,
and the Emperor Ing is basically kind of like the Metroid Queen, but a giant bug instead.
Officially not a Metroid, but don't worry, the Metroid Prime is still kind of wandering around.
But the space pirates are still messing around with Metroid, so they're in the game, too.
Yeah.
It's a fun little game, but some people hate the split design aspect of the game.
Yeah, it's got kind of up and down opinions. It was like, I remember at the time, the big things people really didn't like were the light dark world game, the fact that it was just generally harder than they expected, and the key search at the end of the game.
Yeah, which is also in the first game, but I think it's more annoying this time.
Yeah, just because it's harder to move around in Metroid Prime 2, it became more of a bugbear, and also the fact that people were seeing it a second time when they hadn't much liked it the first time.
Mm.
Like, there's like a... I think there are artifacts in the first game. You have to, like, scan them. They're not that much of a pain in the first game. As I recall, I think the keys that you need at the end essentially don't, in 2, don't open up until the end of the game.
Yeah, which means you can't collect them ahead of time.
Yeah, so there's no way to mitigate how long that's going to take. It's just one of those things where it's like, it's the end of the game, I would like to be done, but the game's decided I'm not done.
Mm.
Which can sour people. But it's not a bad game by any stretch.
The one little thing that I thought was interesting is how they worked with the dual worlds, is that you could use a light beam to shoot like a... basically a torch that would kill enemies on impact if they were in the vicinity and they're weak enough.
Yeah.
Otherwise they take damage, one other thing the game has is a multiplayer mode, but I don't know too many people that actually play that.
Yeah, that was one of those, like, they started really getting into the idea of experimenting with, well, we did make a first person game. We can make multiplayer shooting work, and it's just like, no one really wanted that, but they kept trying it.
So one of the things I didn't like about Metroid Prime 2 over the first game is the fact that the ending is so difficult, because Emperor Ing has two phases, and the first phase is hard enough, in my opinion.
Because,
it's hard to, like, get a clear shot off, because you have to hit a very specific area, and I think it weakens you too much, the third phase, which is a problem because there's actually a third fight after that, and it's a completely different boss, and they're tough.
Mm.
And you have to worry about a timer countdown while you're doing that boss fight, and there's no checkpointing for that. If this game gets a remaster, which I hope it does, like along with the other two, they add checkpoints in as a quality of life feature.
Yeah, there's generally just a lot of stuff that could be sort of made to smooth the game out a little bit. It's just a lot of little things.
Like at least have the ability to save before that happens.
Yeah, that'd be nice, wouldn't it?
like an auto save file for that, just that part of the game. And like maybe a full restore, so you aren't going in like half empty or whatever. Even just a partial restore would be fine. But that's it for Metroid Prime 2. That leads us to Metroid Prime Corruption, the Wii game.
Yep, this was an ambitious, like, they were trying to do something different with this one. Not completely, but different. And they actually had to scale it back, allegedly, after realizing that they were expecting the Wii to be, like, at least comparable to 360 and PS3 in terms of power, and that was not going to happen. Mm-hmm. So their initial plans of, like, having environments that were, that involved, like, open world and, like, moving around with the gunship really got scaled back.
But, one of the first things this game introduced was the concept of voice acting in a Metroid game beyond just a opening scroll that has was a few lines in Metroid 3.
Yeah.
And you get, because a lot of the, at least just the commander, talks to you a lot.
Mm.
But another thing this game did was it introduced motion controls, and they aren't bad. I didn't have too much of a problem with them, but there are some people out there that whose brains just aren't really wired to handle motion controls.
Yeah, I think they work quite well. I think just being able to point and fire is really useful, but some people really can't get around them.
It could, it's like the only thing that could be improved for this version of the game is if it gets remastered, is letting you be able to use a controller if you want. Unlike the Metroid
Prime. Like, it's an option.
Yeah, Metroid Prime Trilogy kind of failed at that because it was all motion controls.
Yeah, I would suspect that if this does get remastered, that they will, just by virtue of the fact that now two sticks are standard.
Mm-hmm.
So they would have, like, a logical way to go about remastering that process.
But it's called Corruption because she's got infected by Phazon and she needed to alter her suit in order to stave that off. And also, you fight other hunters that have been corrupted along the game as the story moves on.
Yeah.
And they kind of serve as like a halfway waypoint between you and getting to the boss of that area.
Mm-hmm.
And like the energy girl, she's a particularly hard one because she could possess different machines.
Mm-hmm.
And it takes a while to actually finish that boss fight.
Yeah.
Bullet sponge. But the old beams come back in this release, so there's no ammo system anymore, other than your missiles and your power bombs.
Mm-hmm.
But there are a lot more wide open areas in this game to explore compared to
the last one. Yeah, kind of remnant of that intended open world design at one point. But yeah, this also has, like, this generally just has more of a story focus because you also have, like, the weird thing about Aurora units that are kind of like the Mother Brain, but not really. It's actually
recycled in Dread, where they're called central units, and they're like miniature versions of that.
Yeah, I think officially the difference is supposed to be that the Chozo made the Mother Brain, that the like Galactic Federation made the Aurora units.
Mm.
And
that's sort of the final boss of the game, where you fight a giant Mother Brain thing.
Yeah. Mother Brain adjacent.
There's also a new hyper mode mechanic, which is kind of like the hyper mode that you get at the end of Super Metroid.
But you can, like, activate it at any point, but if you do, like, it raises your corruption level, so you have to be careful with it.
Yeah.
It's kind of a neat idea.
Like, the only other way to lower your corruption level is to hit, get an energy refill station or something.
Mm-hmm. But yeah, like, this was a fairly early Wii game, but it was one of those ones that, like, really, you know, they really needed some strong games in their first year, and I think this, yeah, this is, like, about 10 months after console launch, and for a game that early in life cycle,
I think it's quite good. I think it came out 2 years after Other M did.
2 years before, you mean?
Oh, 2 years, yeah, that's right, because that's a 2009 game.
Yeah, this is an 07 game, yeah. So I would imagine...
So that this game's voice acting probably inspired that game to have it, but who knows?
It's one of those things, like... actually, it looks like they're almost precisely 3 years apart. Mm. You know, Other M seems to be a 2010 game. Mm. August 2010 for Other M, and August 07 for Corruption. But yeah, I would imagine in the wake of Prime 3, which was very clearly designed to be kind of like a tying the bow on the Prime subseries, mm-hmm. for the time being. They decided that Retro decided they wanted to do something else, and they end up on Donkey Kong Country, and Sakamoto ends up pitching another semi-2D, semi-3D Metroid, and that's probably where Other M happens. Mm-hmm.
But I'm wondering whether or not we'll see a Metroid Prime trilogy before Prime 4 comes out or after at this point.
I'd suspect we'll see proper like re-unveiling of Metroid Prime 4 sometime in 2022.
Mm.
With the announcement of some sort of like re-release or remastering work being done on it, some portion of the Prime franchise, okay. Whether it'll be all three at once, that's probably the bigger
question. Apparently, Christopher Sabat did voice work for this game.
That's beautiful, but I suppose he is from Texas, yeah. So that makes perfect sense. So
I wonder how many Funimation's voice actors were tapped for this game.
Yeah. Nintendo usually goes union, so mildly surprising, but I suppose that's probably, it was down to how Retro Studios wanted to manage things.
But, I guess we can talk a little bit about Metroid Prime Trilogy for the Wii a little bit more, but, that introduced an achievement-like system for the game.
Yeah, they put all three together and they all had, like, pseudo-achievements, because that was the thing to do at the time. Things. Yeah.
Some of them were hard. I just gave up on those. I just got the key ones to unlock the things I wanted to unlock.
The trilogy was actually kind of like a nice boon that they gave to the Western release, because at the very least in Japan, I think they just released 1 and 2 as new flight control releases. That sort of short-lived...
concept. I remember it came, if you ordered it from certain retailers, you could get a steelbook for the game.
Yeah.
And I have that steelbook.
It's a very nice package.
Bought the trilogy from the Wii U eShop, though, as a Wii title. Because it has improved loading times. I haven't touched it since I bought it, though. Now I'm wondering, like, if I wasted my money, because I'll probably get the HD version when that happens.
Oh, well. Not much to be done for it now.
But, like, that is a way you could play the game before the eShop closes for the Wii U.
Yeah, which I think is probably, like, next February, if I were to hazard a guess.
But, that's it for the main Prime series. Now we get to talk about the spin-offs. Metroid Prime Pinball. Yeah.
You love pinball. That's actually a good pinball game.
Yeah, and it is one of the two. Well, I think there are more, but like one of the official supported games that were in Nintendo's catalog, specifically, not third party, that use the DS Rumble Pack.
Yeah, a truly baffling object. I don't really want something I'm holding in my hands to rumble that much. I usually, like... I don't think I ever saw someone who owned a DS Rumble Pack. I forget what it even plugged into.
What's kind of disappointing about this release, though, is that it's strictly Metroid Prime. There's no maps from Metroid Prime 2 at all.
Yeah, which is weird, because it is a game released between 2 and 3.
But it's a fun little game, and it was developed by Fuse Games.
Yeah.
Who worked on Mario Pinball Land, which I would not recommend, because that was them limited by the hardware that they were making that game on.
Yeah, Pinball Land is just generally trying to do too much for what it has access to. Prime Pinball is a marked improvement. It's actually a very good little pinball game.
It's like, why didn't we get Prime Pinball 2? That would have been fun.
It would have been nice, but I imagine that Prime Pinball sell terribly well.
And then there's Metroid Prime Hunters, which is the next spinoff.
Now that's the one people didn't like.
Yeah. If you bought a DS at launch, it was a pack-in demo cartridge that came with it called First Hunt, which was basically an alpha or beta version of the game.
Yeah, they wanted that game out for launch. Initially, when they announced the DS, like, that was one of the games they claimed would be out for launch. That didn't happen. It ended up... It got pushed back relatively far. Like, the DS launches in, like, the December of 04, and Prime Hunters ends up finally rearing its head in March of 06.
It's also weird because this game was developed by Nintendo's Redmond-based in-house studio in America. But, I don't think they made anything else after that.
NST did, and there's like a, if you want to know why NST doesn't make things anymore, because they made a lot of things in the mid-aughts, but if you want to know why they don't make things anymore, there's a very good video by a guy on YouTube by a guy named Liam Robertson talking about their last major attempt at a game, Project Hammer, which it was like a huge boondoggle in terms of how its development went and caused Nintendo to just completely lose faith in that studio being able to release games and release them on time. Prime Hunters, I'm given to understand, part of the reason that it ended up being delayed so long is that it seems to have had like its single player overhauled after reactions to its initial unveiling. Mm-hmm. And its single player is still pretty limited, but apparently it originally was basically just bots and maps.
Yeah. I get the feeling from playing through that game. So this is clearly meant to be played online with people.
Yeah. This was a multiplayer forward. Nintendo Software Technology clearly wanted to test out, like, we want to make an online multiplayer FPS, and Metroid is the guys we will use to do it.
And yeah, it does not play well. It controls well enough. It's just there's nothing interesting to do or see in the game.
Yeah, like it's as a proof of concept that the idea of a multiplayer FPS could work on the DS, like that it's successful at, but like this multiplayer DS FPS is simply not interesting enough. I don't think anyone was ever really committed enough to the idea to make a particularly interesting one.
And like you said, the story is very inconsequential, so who cares about it?
Yeah, it's very like it was not the primary concept, and it feels like it was thrown in relatively late.
And
in the
speaking
game.
Of other underwhelming games, there's Metroid Prime Federation Force. Which is what a lot of people got mad at, because it's not what they wanted. They wanted to learn about Metroid Prime 4.
Yeah, I'm convinced that if they had just announced those two in the other order, like, people would have maybe given Federation Force a chance.
But
they weren't ready to announce Switch games
having
yet.
Having played through the game enough to realize that I needed other people to play, so I sold it.
Yeah, like that game was a game that could not work unless there was like audience pickup for people to play it with. It is a co-op game.
I mean, you could technically do everything by yourself, but it's so much more cumbersome to do it that way.
It was never intended to be played. It's like playing Monster Hunter by yourself. You weren't supposed to do that.
You could play Monster Hunter by yourself, but Monster
Hunter... but it's not how it's intended.
I mean, that's how I play Monster Hunter usually, but I still get enjoyment out of doing solo hunts.
Yeah, it's a better game. Like, Monster Hunter's obviously a better game, but yeah.
But
this was farmed out to Next Level Games, which...
Like, I do like the concept of, like, the one could be the healer, the other could be the attacker, the other could be support, and another could be an all-arounder.
Yeah.
Just doing this what's needed at the, like, if you need extra support or extra healing or extra attacking, they could be that person. But, its story is really weird, because, like, how in the hell did Samus get kidnapped or whatever, and you have to rescue her?
Yeah, I need to double check on this, because I did not play any real portion of this.
Samus, you hit those bars a little too hard last night, and that's why you got captured.
Just completely drunk off her ass.
You need to cut down on whatever it is you're drinking.
I can only assume
it's like, I get, Samus, you have coping mechanisms and that's why you drink, but you're becoming an alcoholic and you need to stop. Actually, I'd be surprised if she actually has like an insane tolerance level for alcoholic consumption because of all the stuff that she's gone through already. Like maybe all that like Metroid DNA and SAX or X DNA is like making her like immune to alcohol damage.
Depressing. But yeah, this is just to hit on the actual developers here. This was made by Next Level Games, which is a company that Nintendo repeatedly partnered with until finally outright purchasing them earlier this year, actually.
Yeah, they made that Punch-Out game for the Wii, and then they made
They did the Mario Strikers games before that.
Also, Luigi's Mansion Dark Moon and Luigi's Mansion 3.
Yeah, they became, like, the Luigi's Mansion developer. From that, it's probably fair to... You know, except they're a very talented development studio. I can see why they were acquired. But
that really sums up all Prime.
Yeah, it's a series aside from 4, which we still don't know much about, other than that it changed hands to be in Retro Studios' hands partway through development. Mm-hmm.
But that's it for this retrospective, and hope you can join us again for discussion of Fusion, Dread, and Other M. And maybe after that we could talk about all the games that were inspired by the genre that this game series spawned.
That could be an entire 100 episode series by itself.
Yeah, we'll just touch the highlights, the ones that we...
We'll hit the big ones, like Hollow Knight and shit. Mm-hmm.
But until then, see you guys next time. Bye-bye.
See ya.